Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Nerd Soup. I'm Bo Oliver, today joined by Aaron, the Nerd Soup Monkey, also here. Started there. I hit a dead spot on that old 1980s Celtics hardwood.
You weren't sure if it was today or not.
I wasn't sure.
I had no idea.
My perception of time. The other day, someone says, oh, it's thundering, it's snowing by me. I'm like, dude, be careful. Next morning, I'm like, how was that snowstorm last week? Did you guys get through that? She goes, you mean last night? I swear, that was genuine, dude. I had no idea. A whole day is a week for me now. But
I'll tell you what, April is going a lot faster than March.
April
those
is,
last
yeah.
2 weeks of March were a crawl. April's speeding by.
Yeah, someone said March was a year, April's been a week. Mm. It's just been cruising by. But we are back to review another two episodes, episodes 3 and 4, of The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls 1990s documentary about the final season of their dynasty. But they've been going back a couple of years, looking into the origins of Scottie Pippen, Jordan, of course, Dennis Rodman in these two episodes more so, and even Phil Jackson. But I guess we'll start with the star of these two episodes, Dennis Rodman. He was just lighting it up on Twitter as well. People can't get over how eccentric this man was in his playing days, and still is.
Can't get over that they just let him take a 48-hour vacation to Vegas. I need one of those so goddamn bad.
That I love the back and forth with Michael Jordan's like, I need a fucking vacation. If anybody needs a vacation, everything, the way he told that story was so hilarious. Somebody said that he invented load management by going to Vegas. He literally took load management and just went to Vegas. And he said, we give him 48 hours. We ain't getting him back in 2 days.
No.
Jordan knew.
I think the thing about Phil Jackson, and I think it's very evident in that decision to let him go, is just the way he understands his players, where I don't think any other coach would be like, are you serious? Like all this thing about team first, like you're turning your back on your teammates. He knew. It's like, I know Dennis on a personal level. I love that connection they have with the Native American culture and how they bonded over that.
I had to laugh out loud when he said that. He says, me and Dennis have a Native American bond.
Yeah.
Of course, Phil Jackson has this bond with Dennis.
Love that friendship.
Me
that
too.
Might be my favorite thing of all time. Even though I hate Phil Jackson, but past Phil Jackson.
You can't hate Phil Jackson, man. Can you let go of it?
Until we get out of that hole that he dug us in.
Yeah, that hole.
Are we still paying Joakim Noah?
We were already 6 feet underground. He basically added a couple inches. Come on.
A couple inches.
Everything was going swimmingly with Isaiah and Marbury before Phil came and fucked it up.
But just that the wherewithal and, I guess, foresight to let him do that. Like, he had to basically carry the load with Pippen out. He needed a break and go to Vegas.
Going to Vegas with Carmen Electra.
Yeah.
That was so funny. The story of Jordan running around Vegas trying to find Rodman. Someone said, let's be honest here. Jordan was out there on the crap tables. He was getting a couple hands in.
We've
got to find Dennis.
Carmen Electra. Look at the fastball, huh?
Yeah. No. She's still. Well, to go back to your point about Phil Jackson, weird transition there. Carmen to Phil. Yeah. No, that's why a lot of people consider him the best coach of all time. And in the Shaq biography, one of the biographies that he wrote, he talks about his first meeting with Phil Jackson and how they kind of developed this friendship where he knew that Kobe would be fine, but that he had to almost suck up to me, talking about Shaq, that I had to be the favorite, be like a father figure. Mm-hmm. Kobe didn't need to talk to him. He knew he was going to be out there playing his hardest. Phil Jackson knows personalities. He knows how to motivate people. He knows what makes people tick. He knows what not to say, what to do, what not to do. And that's why he is the genius. And he's a weird guy, too.
Yeah.
Weird knows weird.
I love the setup of the doc where it is very much a Jordan doc, but they're taking these individual episodes to go into different aspects of what made that team what it is.
So well-paced. Yeah. Like, talking about Rodman and then going to his years, his formative years in Detroit, mm-hmm. how he kind of developed that playing style, and then just going right into a little bit of the history of that Pistons team. It's just been so well done. And the Pistons, those two Piston teams, they were bullies, man. They were bullies. And it's just a style of basketball that you can't play anymore. But there was a lot of grace on that team, man. Joe Dumars, mm-hmm. Isaiah Thomas, probably still one of the top three point guards of all time. I think he's become very underrated.
Yeah, it's definitely a style of basketball that we don't really see anymore due to all the rule changes and the such. But, I mean, yeah, just the edge they played with, saying, yeah, Jordan can come to the lane, but he's going to end up on his ass.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, really, I mean, Jordan obviously before that, all-world scorer, just a – he was still Jordan, but it took that and the motivation to beat those guys, put on the extra weight, play a more team-oriented game that truly made him a champion.
Yeah, it was just year after year, those same guys. And they talked about how the NBA kind of wanted to transition from Larry Magic to Jordan, but they were in the way. Mm-hmm. They kept him from becoming a champion so that he can really reach his full marketability potential. Because you have to win. And we saw it with LeBron. With Jordan, because you always hear the 6-for-6, he was a great winner. You don't really remember those days of the late 80s, early 90s, mm-hmm. of people questioning him as a team player and that you can't win with him. I was also very fascinated by his relationship with Doug Collins, because I always wondered in the back of my head, did Jordan enjoy playing on Doug Collins, under Doug Collins, because his rep was that he wore on players? Mm-hmm. And they go into that a little bit, how he kind of wore out his welcome.
Well, Jordan says he was pissed. I mean, he liked Doug Collins' fire. They showed him sweating on the sidelines like he was playing in the game. And Jordan wasn't too happy with the Phil move in the beginning, but
yeah.
Obviously it worked out pretty well. And
hey, Doug got him close, man.
I know.
That's the thing. Doug got him to an Eastern Conference Finals. You would think that they win a couple with Doug in the 90s. I mean, if you improve the roster, you get a Scottie Pippen that's more developed, and Dennis Rodman on the back end of the three-peats.
They definitely would have won. Another thing with the Detroit Pistons is they were getting up there in age, too. So it was kind of that natural progression to move on to the Michael Bulls. I don't know if they would have won 6-for-6 with Jordan and Doug Collins, but 6-for-8, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, you never know.
But even Jerry Krause, I mean, as much as they love to clown him, and the way he did fuck it up at the end, but
They said in the balls, doc, the balls.
Trust in Tex first. I mean, Tex, he showed Jackson the triangle, and he kind of influenced that style of play. And yeah, that move, I mean, it took the league by shock, it seemed. And looking at it from present day till back then, just imagine a coach in this day and age building a team like that, getting that far, and then just getting fired. I mean, David Blatt, but that's just a whole different
situation. Well, it's very similar to Mark Jackson and Steve Kerr, and that Doug Collins and Mark mm-hmm. Jackson were very rah-rah guys. They're going to ride you. They're going to get you to play defense. They'll get you to play hard. But offensively, I don't want to say that they're limited, but they're not as creative mm-hmm. with the X and O's. Doug Collins was always relying on Jordan. The triangle offense kind of transformed that, where it was Scottie Pippen playing point forward, more team-oriented, just the lanes opening up, the motion offense of the triangle offense. Same thing with Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr comes in, you keep the same intensity, you keep the same effort, defensive presence, open up the offense. Mm-hmm. Get Steph Curry out of pick and rolls, move it, get Curry off ball. That's what you can obviously respect something that a person built, but then you have to give credit for, I mean, Phil Jackson, you know, he goes 6-0, goes 5 with the Lakers. I think there's something to say of his ability to coach. Mm-hmm. But you also give credit to Doug Collins. He feels like a legendary coach, but he's not. He's never won a championship. He's never had overwhelming success, but he's just been around the game for so long. I didn't know he was the number one overall pick. That was pretty interesting. Had a good playing career, but yeah, that was cool to see them go into that relationship. I love that Jordan loves him too.
Yeah, it's like we said before, it was cool getting not only Dennis Rodman, but like you said, Phil Jackson's a very interesting guy too, and kind of his road to...
Yeah, well, to touch on that, to appoint your assistant, your lead assistant, to fire the guy that just brought you to the Eastern Conference Finals, and you promote Phil Jackson. Like you said, got to give credit to Krause.
Yeah, it's...
If that move backfires, you're done.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting to see just how it all worked out so perfectly. And that was interesting, too, seeing how Jordan wasn't considered a winner. You couldn't win with Jordan. He's just an elite scorer. And it just shows, like, nothing helps your legacy as much as winning.
No, it's so important, man. Mm-hmm. It's so important to get that championship. And you look at a guy like Kawhi, you look at his regular season stats, this isn't one of the best players of all time, but we've seen what he's done in the mm-hmm. playoffs. We know how consistent he is on both ends, and we look at him and say, that's one of the top 10 guys I've ever seen. Well, maybe the stats don't tell the story.
Well, Jordan made it so difficult, too, because he didn't only win, he won 6, and 6-0. So it's like, all right, LeBron might have gotten there early. He lost, and he took a couple years, had to join the Big 3, then he finally won the 2, and then he went back home to Cleveland, won another one against the 73-win Warriors, and people still don't think that's enough because of the standard Jordan set.
Yeah, for Phil Jackson, like I said, weird guy, obviously played for the Knicks, won the 2 championships, one of my mom's favorite players. And what they mentioned in the doc was that he was kind of Rodman before Rodman. Mm-hmm. My mom always used to say about Phil Jackson, I would get a kick out of it, nobody guarded an inbounds like Phil Jackson. He was so long. He was so tall. So, yeah, it's a good skill to have in the NBA.
Making my prototype for 2K21, pure inbound defender.
Pure inbound defender, Phil Jackson, had it on Hall of Fame. But he had great success playing, and then also his coaching in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. That was interesting as well, to see all those small towns so obsessed with their basketball league. The basketball league over there is still pretty big.
Yeah, you know about that at all?
No, I had no idea about them gutting chickens and pouring it over the team's bench. That's like European soccer fans. That type of intensity.
We're missing that.
We're kind of lacking on the fanatic.
I think the best thing ever being murdered in my life was that I'm an Islander fan, so when they played the Capitals years back in the Coliseum in the first round of the playoffs, there were stories that Islander fans were stealing Washington, D.C. license plates in the parking lot.
That's funny.
I respect the hell out of it. Yeah. Man, no. That's the worst thing you can do to someone. It's like you have to go to the DMV. You can't even drive home, but when you do get home, you're going to have to sit in the DMV for a whole day.
Fans can get crazy, dude. Yeah, but then he has his success in Puerto Rico, and he also coached in another junior league. I forget the name of the league, but he won the championship wherever
CBA.
That was. CBA, right. That was a Canadian league?
Was it ABA?
It was one of those ABA, CBAs.
Yeah, it's Albany.
Right.
One of the Albany.
Yeah.
Phil did bring New York a championship in his coaching days, after all, huh?
And his playing days. He's got 3 overall. Come on, man.
New York legend.
And, he gets a job as the assistant coach. And Tex Winter also followed him to L.A. I'm pretty sure he was an assistant coach on the Lakers as well, and he's kind of the genius behind the triangle offense. Mm-hmm. And an interesting type of genius, not one to take the lead, but more to kind of play the sidelines, play behind the curtains.
I love the way they visualize the triangle when they had that overhead shot and they were just moving. They were moving around and they were moving like the all the angles and everything. I thought that was a very cool little insert there.
Yeah, when they go into videos on how the triangle offense works, they talk about just an endless amount of possibilities with the motion. And people still implement parts of that offense today. Obviously, the game has become way more spread out. But I think that was kind of the first step going in that direction, getting back to the ball movement, getting back to the motion.
I saw a meme. It was Melo didn't understand a triangle, so he didn't like it. Rodman's like, oh, it's pretty easy. It was just a triangle.
That's what it is, right? Well, the triangle today, it's just the game has become so predicated on three-point shooting. And I think the last team to run it exclusively and win a championship were his 2010 Lakers. Mm-hmm. But it's not like he implemented the triangle in Chicago and it spread throughout the NBA. It was still a very specific offense.
Yeah.
For the Bulls and the Lakers. But like I said, teams implement variations of it.
Yeah, definitely.
But it worked for Jordan. And it worked mostly to get Scottie Pippen in that point forward role. And that's where he thrived.
Yeah, and it finally worked out. They finally beat Detroit. And the fact that he still hates his Isaiah Thomas is awesome.
What do you think about that, the walk-off?
I like that he still holds a grudge. I think it's a petty grudge, though.
Because, Jordan's, yeah.
Yeah, because they did show the Celtics did the same thing, and it took Isaiah basically running down McHale to actually get a handshake. And I don't know. Nowadays, obviously, with the whole camaraderie and sportsmanship there is in the league, that it's kind of unheard of to see something like that happen. I mean, even Bill Belichick goes to shake someone's hand if he loses in the Super Bowl, but I don't know. That's just the way it was back then.
LeBron got a lot of flack for that in 2009. Mm-hmm. Didn't shake with Orlando, just walked off. And then the next year he was hugging the Celtics when he lost.
Yeah.
So, no, it's the thing is with MJ and Isaiah, I don't want to take sides because they're both massive mm-hmm. assholes. They're such douchebags, the both of them. So, I mean, whose side am I going to take between the two guys that didn't bring me any success?
Well, I love what, what's his name?
In my fandoms.
Well, I love what Lambeer said. I think he went on the jump, and he's like, I don't want to apologize. I don't care. It's like, I don't care what the media thinks. That's just the way it was.
And I think it was Cartwright who said, they walked off like a bunch of bitches.
Was that? No, I think that was, what's his name?
Grant.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that made me laugh out loud. I mean, the grudges there are, it's what it is. I loved it when he was talking about how Scottie Pippen, he needed somebody to fight there with him. Scottie would fight back if he knew that somebody had his back. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why Jordan took him under his wing. When Jordan and Rodman were getting into it, just screaming at each other on opposing teams, that made me pumped up. It made me want to play. Like, yeah, I love when you dig into the trenches and you come in and defend a teammate, you know?
Well, just the whole mentality, too, how they're like, if we don't react, they know that we're not fazed anymore.
Right, yeah.
And just
that was the 91 series, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the year before with the migraine, that was also, you could tell Jordan's still pissed.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I think he had a migraine or something.
He's like, what can I say? He said he had a migraine. What am I going to not believe him?
What can I say? She said she needs a hat to fly. I gotta go. I mean, migraines are tough, though. If you can't see, you're seeing double out there. I'm surprised he even played.
Yeah, there are certain injuries where I can understand you could push through it, but like when people give LeBron flack for the cramps, mm-hmm. you can't walk with a cramp. Has anybody listening experienced a cramp before? You know how bad it is. A migraine, he claimed that he couldn't see.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was a game 7, too, so you never know. Maybe if he was 100%, I could have slayed the beast a year earlier.
Yeah, they get 7. Mm-hmm. He goes 7-0. And, you know, it's tough when Rodman is the guy staring you down on the other side. And who was it? I think it was David Aldridge who called Dennis Rodman the best on-ball defender that he's ever seen.
Yeah. The way Rodman was talking about rebounding was fantastic, which just playing off the angles and, oh, Jordan shooting, I know that his spin's going to be like this, so it's going to go this way, and I know how to position myself. He really just made it into an art form.
Yeah, he's almost trying to explain his incredible instincts, because mm-hmm. he has these incredible ball instincts. He knows where to go, where the ball is going to fall. And so him explaining it sounds just nonsensical, but believable. It's like, yeah, that's how he sees it.
6'7", to be that efficient at rebounding. It's one thing to have like good timing and just positioning, but his will to get a ball, you'd see he would tip it up 5-6 times.
He was averaging like 19 rebounds a game in his prime. Nobody comes close to that in the modern NBA. I think Drummond gets like 15, 16.
He was just the perfect player to add to that team for their second three-peat. And I know Draymond Green's been getting a lot of hate recently because he said something where, like,
he called himself the new Rodman or something like that, right?
No, he said something about us talking about him, Clay, and Steph, and people are just clowning on him. But he does bring that intangible style play to that team in a very different way. He's not the rebounder Dennis Rodman is by any stretch, but just the way if you put Draymond on the Knicks, he's not doing anything. But he was just a perfect match for that team for them to succeed. Rodman, like you see, he was a perfect pick, a perfect piece for the Pistons, San Antonio, and then put him back on a ready-made team like the Bulls, and you can just escalate that whole squad to a different level.
Yeah, Draymond Green is any championship team would want him. Mm-hmm. If you're a top six, top seven team, Draymond fits in with any team. And he fits in with the Knicks, but he's just going to do the same he would do on the Knicks with the Lakers. He's going to get you 8, 8, and 8. That's not going to, you know, you're not a number one guy doing that. But you can be an all-time great number three, number four guy, and that's what he does. And Rodman, it was a lot of his athleticism, you know? Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not comparing the two because they have very different games. But the way
but the roles,
the
roles are similar.
They have those
intangibles. Rodman, it's the same thing. You could plug in Rodman right now on any team in his prime. I mean, he's a guy, he's a psycho out there. He's your best defender, he's your best rebounder.
We need a guy. Speaking of 2K, we need a guy in our Pro-Am team next year to go 0-20.
No, we don't.
0 points, 20 rebounds.
No.
Just focus on getting the boards, play some defense.
That is the last thing that we need. We need goddamn shooters. I also found it interesting that Phil Jackson's genius coaching in their first championship season was pass it to John Paxson. It's like, hey, Mike, who's open? John? Pass him the ball.
Jordan, he was just his whole mindset on the game of basketball changed due to the new offense and the way Phil coaches. You don't have to do it by yourself. Let your teammates hit open shots.
I love when he did complain about the equal opportunity offense.
Oh, yeah.
With Cartwright, the balls.
I don't want him taking the shot.
he's been really funny throughout this whole documentary.
And we do see what made Jordan so iconic is just the way he was able to come up so big in big games. And that buzzer beater against Cleveland with the shot. Everyone's
seen iconic.
That.
I've probably seen that 300 million times. Him hanging in the air, clutching. It rattles in.
I love how before the
fist
game,
bumps,
he pointed,
go home.
Out, pointed out to all the writers. It's like, I proved you wrong. You're tonight.
Chicago writers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we took care of you the other day, took care of you last night. Tonight is you.
I love how he shit on who was guarding him because the defense wasn't all that bad. The problem was he went up with him.
Why would they put that guy on him? Elo? Craig Elo? That's all you hear. It's the Craig Elo shot.
He went up with him, but the problem was he was on the ground. Jordan was still at his apex.
He was still floating around. He's just moving around, like maneuvering in the air. Yeah. Ron Harper, a guy who went to go win 3 championships with Jordan. Jordan even said it. He plays me the best. Coaches always try to get cute. They always try and get cute. Like when Pop took Duncan out in 2013, and then Bosch gets the offensive rebound. Just stick with your guns, man. Mm-hmm. Stick with what works. But, and yeah, I don't think Harper is making a difference because, like you said, the man was up there for about, like, 10 seconds. Just changing, just doing shit. What are you doing up there, guy?
I think, I mean, it's
that seemed like a great series. Poor Cleveland. Yeah. That team may go on to, I mean, the Bulls gave Detroit a run for their money that year, almost beat them. Maybe Cleveland does. A lot of people said Cleveland was the better team. Maybe they overwhelmed the Pistons and get that 1990 championship.
Yeah, and then you think Jordan can go back, seeing that one of LeBron's accolades that people bring up when they're comparing the two is that championship in Cleveland. Like, he got the first one. It's like, man, maybe I'll go back in time. Miss the shot, rattle
yeah,
out.
Yeah, right. He would do some shit like that. Is there any way I can time travel? No, no, Mike. It's the only shot he'd want to miss. Can't believe he missed that free throw. What was that game for? Boy, Skip Bayless must have been really hard on him.
Yeah. Well, it helps when you go on to go 6-0 in the finals.
Yeah, that's true.
You can miss those free throws.
I also enjoyed the 1991 finals, the behind-the-scenes look at that. We're seeing Magic Johnson kind of passing the torch to Jordan. And it's not the same Lakers teams because at that point Kareem had been retired. They still have James Worthy, and Magic Johnson was a couple of years from retiring. So it wasn't those. It wasn't Showtime,
mm-hmm.
But still, people were excited to watch it. We probably had the two biggest names, arguably still, in the game of basketball.
Well, that's what it was: Magic versus MJ. And I'm trying to think of an equivalent that we've seen. I think it would have been Kobe LeBron.
Yeah, it would have been our. Yeah, it would have been a Kobe LeBron, especially because Kobe was around that age of kind of towards the back nine, and LeBron was up and coming.
Yeah. But it kind of is incredible how the NBA got, they were able to go to the Celtics to, well, hold on. They were able to have those Celtics and Lakers teams. You have a Pistons team, Isaiah Thomas is another star, then right to MJ, right to Kobe, right to LeBron. It's been a pretty impressive run, but.
Well, that's what all the talk after Jordan left was, who was going to fill this hole. And we're seeing that talk now with LeBron. What is the NBA going to do when LeBron leaves? The NBA always needs a main character.
Mm-hmm.
And Jordan was the perfect one. Because it was just such an extreme passion when it came to those Bulls teams. You either loved them or you hated them, more so than... And the love there was throughout the country. There are people that I know today that's just, hey, Michael Jordan made me love basketball. That's why I'm a Bulls fan, so...
I love how they showed how Pippen would pick up Magic full court and just the way they were swarming those teams. And even the Pistons, I mean, they swept them. So it was definitely their time, and they took every advantage they could and didn't stop. So, and just the elation of Jordan when he finally won, I think that was a moment where they even said, like, we weren't even sure Jordan had emotions, and to see him react like that.
We'd only seen anger and frustration mm-hmm. up until this point. Yeah, Scottie Pippen's defense picking up Magic Johnson to shut down who many people believe to be the best point guard of all time. That's why he was so damn impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the stories about the 92 Dream Team when they played, the Bulls had drafted a European player, and they ended up playing that country in the Olympics, and Jordan and Pippen made a point to shut this guy down, just to completely break him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did to NBA teams, man. That might be the best defensive team of all time, because Jordan, like they said, and Doug Collins was talking about, I have the MVP of the MVP of the All-Star game, the defensive player of the year. Mm-hmm. What more can this guy fucking do? And to have those three guys on your perimeter, Pippen, Jordan, and how would you even get by them?
I have no idea.
Draymond Green was talking about today, we're the best team of all time. Me and Steph Curry would kill Shaq in a pick and roll. You ain't killing Jordan and Pippen, because they're switching everything, dog. And they got Rodman back there, too. So that's why Miami, too, was so good when they had Wade and LeBron in their primes, just able to run like maniacs on the perimeter, just chasing everything.
Yeah, well, I think the Warriors are an all-time great team, but in your best season, you lost. So
they have a better argument with Durant.
Yeah.
I put the Durant teams up against those 96 Bulls.
It's hard enough to compare players, whole teams. It's just impossible. But just the way they played and the standard Jordan kept his teammates to, you rarely have players like that.
Yeah, all that got to him. Although that Mike can't mm-hmm. win, Mike can't lead a team to a championship. And he took it upon himself to make sure that his teammates would be just as dedicated as he, because he realized, I can't do this without four other people.
Besides, like, the true greats, and you know who they are, but it seems like everyone else is playing the game, and they kind of just are the game.
Yeah.
It's just so effortless. It's second nature. All reactions and instinct, it's so fluid that they're just not it looks like they're not trying, obviously, all the work in, and they're trying and always their mind's always moving, but it's just so smooth and effortless. And watching the footage of Jordan, it's just there's nothing like him.
it's funny. There's this this idea that great players can't be great coaches, and I think that your point kind of speaks to it, that the game always came so easily to them. They don't know how to kind of convey what to do. They don't know how to convey their way of approaching the game, because for them it's just, I just did it. Do what I do. That's kind of what Jordan's mindset was before he got involved with Phil Jackson and Tex Winter, and they expanded the philosophies of what can be done on offense. And it is a very simple game, but it can be complex. And it took him that offseason of just dragging everybody with him to hell, saying, we're going to get better. I'm going to force you guys to get better. And we see that with Kobe Bryant, of course. But yeah, with Jordan, and his work ethic is so legendary, where that was his life. There are people who approach the game as kind of a 9-to-5. They're great athletes, but they don't take that extra effort or extra step to improve their games. People always criticize T-Mac, Vince Carter, incredible potential. If they had Kobe's work ethic, maybe they're Michael Jordan. But Michael Jordan wasn't. He was going to squeeze every ounce of potential out of his skill, and that's what he did.
Yeah. Real quick, too, what I absolutely loved about Rodman, too, is that when he came back from Vegas and Phil was like, all right, let's try to get his conditioning back up, and he was just...
Like, he was ready.
Never missed a beat.
That drill sucks. Have you ever done that drill?
No.
Ooh, we did it once in eighth grade. It was hell. I still have nightmares of it. But I love the idea of Rodman being the guy last, and then he just decides to sprint and fuck with everybody. And Jordan telling Steve Kerr to just kind of jog.
Weird. It's kind of weird getting this other perspective on Rodman, because on the outside looking in, it's like, oh, the guy who dyed his hair, he was crazy, great player. But, I mean, just his natural ability, the way he looked at the game, the way he was committed. And even if he did need to take, what it ended up being, 4 days in Vegas.
Yeah.
He can come back, and you know he's going to give it his all.
And his childhood also was, it was interesting to see his childhood as well. Some things that I'm not really aware of, the fact that he was homeless and that he saw all this crime going on right in front of him, and he never took the temptation. He always managed to stay away from it and carve his own path. That, to me, was very impressive. We always talk about how bizarre and weird he was, but at the end of the day, he had that kind of, I guess, morality inherent in him to kind of stay away from the ills that were plaguing him and his community.
Well, it was very interesting, too, when he left the Pistons, and just you could tell, like, I guess the strain on his mental health, just not being who he was, and then just that freedom when he said, all right, I'm just going to be me. And I think it was with Madonna he said that he kind of got that inspiration to kind of be himself, and that's awesome. And you could see it with the hair and the way he was able to express himself. And one thing, he even mentioned that Michael and Pippen just took him in right away.
Right, yeah. No, they knew that. Yeah. They knew. Those guys. It would be like a Wade and LeBron taking in a guy like that. Mm-hmm. Like even like a Birdman who had his problems. Obviously not as good, but even LeBron taking on J.R. Smith. It's always when you're kind of a controversial, not necessarily a troubled player, but you're out there. Mm-hmm. When you put them with greats, they know to get in line. Because at the end of the day, if they're worth the controversy, they can obviously play. So the great player is going to respect that about their game.
It wasn't even, I mean, I guess back then it was a controversy. But looking at it now, it's like, yeah, he dyed his hair, he dressed and he did all these crazy things. Like, it's not that.
Well, look at his influence.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody is Dennis Rodman in pregame now. Look at Russell Westbrook with his outfits, all the different hairstyles, the tattoos, being the brand, being more than the game. Those guys kind of started it, he and Jordan.
Yeah. And you even see in the 90s, like, he would have interviews with, I saw, like, an Oprah interview, and they would just question him about, like, his sexuality and things like that. And just such a different time.
No, yeah, much different time.
Yeah.
Well, with Jordan, with his playing style, and I guess Rodman, too, but it feels like they were just plucked out of different eras. Because Rodman, right now, you wouldn't bat an eye. It's, oh, yeah, he dyes his hair. He's a little bit off, but whatever. Mm-hmm. In today's game, it's just, he would fit right in, almost. Well, the tail end of Episode 4, they go into the rivalry with the Chicago Bulls and the Utah Jazz, and that's going to be great to see in Episode 5, because Karl Malone, when you look at him statistically, you think this is the best power forward of all time. It's not even close. But the story around Malone was that he never delivered in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And he got close, man. They got close a couple times.
Among other things.
How the fuck did he get away with that one? Talk about different times.
Yeah, I mean, the 90s are full of great players, and just kind of getting this journey through all these different seasons and decades of who is next for Jordan to conquer, and it's just great after great. It's fun to see, and just kind of getting taking like a time portal back to that time with all the narratives going around with the media input, because it's one thing to see and like read about and look at statistics like, oh, Jordan beat them, but to hear the way that all these different players and teams were regarded by people knowledgeable about the game during that time just brings it to a whole different level.
They go into that regular season game where they built up the big lead, Chicago, and at this point Scottie Pippen had already come back, and then Utah kind of rallies there at the end. So there were still problems that they were having inside the locker room, even after integrating Scottie Pippen, because Dennis Rodman said when Scottie came back, even though he had the haircut with the threes in it, he became the third wheel in the family. And his descent, they say, was rapid. So that bothered him. So it was a roller coaster season for Rodman. There were so many controversies surrounding this last season. You know, we think back and we just think of the push-off. Game six, the game winner. Jordan walks off, fantasy ending. Mm-hmm. But man, it was hard getting to that point. Well, not only on the court, but mostly off the court.
Well, even with Krause, how we talked about how great and the foresight he had back then. Now, it's like, what are you doing, man? Why are you commenting on the future of your player? You already made it known that the coach is not coming back, and now you're talking about things that, and now in the middle of the season, you're putting speculation on Jordan and all that. We saw how the media was, and even today, with people either contemplating retiring or are you going to come back and things like that. They came over a lot, that team.
Dude, the media
inside
just,
and outside.
The media just hasn't changed, huh?
No.
They cannot be fixed. They hounded that man for the entire 98 season. That's something that I did not know. I didn't know that there was so much speculation. I mean, I guess I should have, because it feels kind of abrupt to leave after age 35. Mm-hmm. But yeah, to push that guy out, to be so jealous. I mean, you're the GM. I was thinking, if I was the GM, I'd be sitting pretty. No one knows who I am. Mm-hmm. I'm rich. I'm friends with all these guys. I get to be friends with Michael Jordan. I invited him to my wedding. That's cool. Do you really want credit, Jerry Krause? I guess some people do. I see some people just drives them to make these rash and or irrational decisions.
I mean, it's not like, yeah, obviously, a GM.
Because Krause and Phil Jackson, that was his boy.
But a GM is never going to be as big as the players.
No.
But you're still going to, I mean, didn't Cashman cares?
Yeah, right. Cashman's going to drive out.
And Cashman is a big name. He gets credit.
And
eventually,
he's also arrogant. Cashman likes being Cashman.
Yeah.
Yeah,
if
eventually.
This never
right.
happened, and let's say they came back and they won another one. Oh, Jerry Krause, the man who built a 7-time world champion.
Yeah, I know. He wasn't thinking.
The best GM of all time who surrounded Jordan with just the right pieces to have him success throughout his career. Yeah, I like that guy.
Right. Maybe he goes on to be commissioner after Stern, or he gets a job in the league office, or he becomes a beloved analyst, you know? You have to, I mean, he wasn't, I would like to, if we have that time machine where Jordan misses a shot, I'd like to go to Krause and be like, can you just, because you're going to get dunked on for the rest of your life. Your entire legacy is going to be you being dunked on.
Right, just bring back a couple episodes of the doc. Don't dance on the team plane after you beat the Pistons. Please.
That was hilarious. Go, Jerry. Go. He was killing it. Are you kidding me? I like to see that. I like to see the good times when they all
like
each
him
other.
Let him have like a minute of fun. Like, all right, go sit down.
Jerry. Yeah, yeah. And then they kicked him out. Go, Jerry. Go sit down, Jerry. That was mean. Maybe that's what it was. He opened up, danced in front of his friends, and they just shot him down.
Yeah.
Poor Jerry. That's why you don't dance in public. That's why I don't dance in public. But this documentary continues to be probably the best thing I've watched on TV this year. It's just so fun just seeing all the behind-the-scenes footage. And
it's pretty incredible how it's just capturing the nation, sports fans, everybody.
We still love the Chicago. Not that we still love them, but we're still so fascinated by that era of basketball. The 90s, the way that it's been romanticized, that this was the premier era for basketball. So we love. And the 90s nostalgia just in general. Mm-hmm. For people our age, of course, but you know, they call it the golden age. So it's a modern golden age with basketball and a lot of other stuff, but it's been fascinating to watch this journey unfold.
10 episodes documentary, so what, we got 6 left?
I know, there's, I feel like plenty, we need more.
There's still plenty to get. Well, 10 on the outside like, looking in, but the way they're doing it twice a week, it's like, oh, we're only gonna have 4 more weeks of this. But
yeah,
it's fascinating. There's still a lot to get to. And I hope he gets it. I hope Jordan gets his 6th.
Well, he's got the 1 right now, so yeah. That's okay. No, only 3, and then he can stop. Then he can go play baseball.
Well, it depends. Like, in the present timeline, he only has 5, but when going back, how does that work?
Right now, he's only got 5, right?
Yeah. So
No, he would still have six if he misses the shot versus Cleveland, because they didn't win that year.
I think we're talking about two different things.
Our timelines have been so. Let's just review Westworld.
Yes.